At noon on KSFR, now looks at the top local news headlines for this Monday, August 5th. Childhood welfare advocates, New Mexico Voices for Children, today warns that over 440,000 New Mexicans will see a cut in their food assistance benefits come November. That's when a temporary federal boost to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, is set to expire. The organization says nearly half of all New Mexico children benefit from SNAP and will be impacted by the cut as the state loses some $47 million in federal aid. A recent report by Feeding America showed that New Mexico already has the highest rate of child hunger in the nation. Not opening today is Valley Meat Company's Horse Slaughterhouse. Heading into the weekend, a federal judge issued a temporary restraining order against the Roswell facility, saying the USDA-approved operation must first perform necessary environmental impact reviews. Horse slaughtering enterprises in the U.S. ceased back in 2007. The judge's order sidelines not only the New Mexico operation, but a similar one preparing to open in Iowa. Santa Fe's Finance Committee will today consider that proposal to permit expanded beer sales and consumption at Fort Marcy Park's semi-pro ball games. Two other committees have already given the nod to allowing game-goers access to beer beyond the current small designated beer garden. The matter arrives at full city council next month. Governor Susana Martinez says that New Mexico's new military veterans fire crews will become a permanent program beyond this year's fire season. Martinez plans an executive budget request to provide for 60 such slots in 2014. The initiative began this summer with a pilot program training and employing some 40 military veterans as wildland fire hand crews that were dispatched to multiple fires around the state, including the Tres Lagunas fire near Pecos and the Thompson Ridge fire in the Jemez. And in other news from the governor, she's announced that Pete Casetas is the new chief of New Mexico State Police. He's been serving as a deputy chief under Robert Schilling, who announced his retirement due to family and health concerns. Casetas, a 20-year veteran with state police, takes the post immediately and will receive an annual salary of some $103,000. The major renovation of the interchange of I-25 and Albuquerque's Paseo del Norte is expected to create some 300 construction jobs over its projected course of 2 years at $75 million. Today's Albuquerque Journal says an additional $18 million is to be spent on preliminary design costs and acquisition of rights of way. Duke City Mayor Richard Berry announced Sunday the final selection of design and build team, Kiewit New Mexico, Bohannon Houston Incorporated, from three firms earlier named as finalists for the job. In less than 2 weeks, a public hearing will see New Mexico's medical board put forth new rules for physician certification of patients in the state's medical marijuana program. The changes recommend using the same standards when prescribing medical cannabis as are used for prescribing narcotic-based pain medications. Opponents of the new rules, however, say it's not a proper comparison, as all marijuana use remains illegal under federal law. The Medical Board public hearing will be held in Santa Fe on August 16th. The New Mexico Department of Health says that results of a survey by the National Center for Disease Control and Prevention shows New Mexico kindergartners' vaccination rates to be at or near goals set by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Specifically, the report cites satisfactory vaccination rates for common childhood diseases such as measles, mumps, pertussis, and diphtheria. Gunhawks Firearms, the Los Lunas gun store that ignited a firestorm of protest when it sponsored a coyote killing contest, has announced a new contest for the person who can kill the most prairie dogs. It starts this Saturday and runs through the 17th. Contestants will pay a fee to enter, with the winner receiving a Smith & Wesson M&P 1522 semi-automatic rifle. Ahead of Santa Fe Public Schools' start of the new school year on Wednesday, August 14th, registration continues this week for students. For students either new to the district or school of attendance, parents and/or guardians are required to bring photo identification, as well as their students' birth certificates, immunization records, or the religious exemption form, and two proofs of residence. Students in grades 6 through 8 at the K through 8 community schools, along with all middle and high school students, must attend registration to get schedules and IDs and make payment of fees. And weather for Santa Fe. Partly sunny days with highs in the mid-80s take us through midweek. There's a 30% chance for late afternoon and evening thundershowers both today and tomorrow, increasing to 40% on Wednesday. Meanwhile, the current Santa Fe temperature now 78 degrees. This is Dan Garrity for KSFR News. At noon, we'll continue in just a moment.
Support comes from New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, where the more you participate in your not-for-profit financial cooperative, the more money you earn. For details on Earn Your Return, go to nmefcu.org or visit their branch on St. Michael's Drive.
12 minutes past the hour as At Noon now segues to today's feature stories. Back in June, a decision was made by the New Mexico Department of Health and Human Services to suspend payments to 15 major mental health providers who are responsible for managing the care of a large number of our residents who are on Medicaid. The subsequent fallout has been significant, with much discord heard from all quarters. Joining us now is State Senator Jerry Ortiz E. Pino from District 12. Senator, give us your take on what has happened.
Secretary of the Human Services Department, which is where the Medicaid program is housed, and so she's in charge of all Medicaid, including the behavioral health part of it. She's alleging that a special audit that was conducted earlier this year by a company out of Boston determined that our 15 largest behavioral health providers, all 15 of them, were found by that audit to have practiced fraudulent or inaccurate or incorrect billing, that they were all guilty of some type of abuse of the program. And so she has suspended all Medicaid payments to those 15 providers. The secretary made arrangements to bring in from Arizona management companies, behavioral health management companies, five of them, to take over the operations, so that her theory was that the therapists would all stay in place and they would just keep on working while the top layer of the organizations would be replaced. This is not what's going on, though. What's happening in reality, however, is that many of those therapists have determined that there's no future at that organization, that the opportunities are so limited that they're leaving. They're finding other jobs and leaving, which is exactly what anybody would have been able to predict if they understood how the system worked.
Does New Mexico itself have enough health management firms capable of handling the work without having to go out of state?
Well, the whole thing, I think, is geared to Centennial Care. That's what the real focus is. You know, we're changing our Medicaid program on January 1st, the whole program will change. So all of these contracts that are being suspended right now, we're all due to expire on December 31st anyhow. That's when the Medicaid program flips over to one in which four large managed care organizations, Blue Cross, Presbyterian, United Healthcare, which is brand new to the state in this sense in running the Medicaid program, and Molina, those four will run everything. There won't be a separate program for behavioral health or two separate programs for long-term care the way it's been in the past. That switchover, I think, is ultimately what led to this change. And I think the managed care organizations have said to the state that behavioral health it's impossible to really make money on it. And so this is a way of trying to sweeten the pot a little bit. They won't be held to any of the existing contractors. They can start afresh with new reimbursement levels and new networks that would be cheaper for them to operate. I think that's what's really behind this.
We've heard of some patients' concerns regarding a need to now establish a good therapeutic relationship with new therapists. Your thoughts on that?
I mean, these are not. Companies that handle furniture or automobiles or where you can switch the salesman or the mechanics or the repair people, you know, from one day to the next and no check. The whole notion of therapy is that there is a relationship developed over time that builds trust And out of that, there's the opportunity to produce change. It's not a mechanical thing. It's not you just give them a pill and they overnight they change. That's not the way it happens in behavioral health.
What's your plan for preventing any disruptive changes from taking place?
We think that there are plenty of options under the federal guidelines that they didn't have to do this. And so we've asked the secretary to reconsider her decision. Her response has been her hands are tied by the federal regulations. So now we've written to the federal authorities saying, this is how we read the regulation, that there were plenty of other alternatives, and hope that the little sanity at the federal level sets in, because there's no need to destroy this system the way it's going on right now. At great expense, I might point out, these Arizona companies aren't coming in at anywhere near the rates that the people they were replacing got. They're coming in at an extra $18 million for 6 months.
Do you hold any hope that in coming months the situation might rectify itself?
I'm afraid that the federal authorities are so happy to have a Republican governor who is playing ball with them on Obamacare, who's expanding Medicaid, who's setting up a health insurance exchange. They don't want to create any kind of frictions. It's up to the state to make these kind of decisions, they're going to say. So my prediction, unfortunately, is that we're going to see the Arizona companies move in. We're going to see a great reduction in services. And then in January, we'll see a very impoverished behavioral health program in the state. You know, there's been some talk of trying to get a special session to deal with this. The reality is that the governor is who's making these decisions. The secretary can't make this decision on her own. If the governor were upset enough about it, she could overrule her. So this is going to ultimately involve legislature saying something and getting the governor to agree with them. In a political year, in the atmosphere that the next year elections are generating, I'm afraid it's going to come down to the voters having to say to the governor, please don't do this. So I would urge the listeners to write the governor, to contact the governor's office and say, this is dangerous, this is unnecessary, this is just a black mark on your record that you don't need heading into an election.
And anything else you'd like to add?
I wish it were simple. I wish we could come up with a 1-2-3 kind of solution. But it, as most things in New Mexico, boils down to the people voicing enough concern that even politicians will listen.
State Senator Jerry Ortiz Pino, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR, which will continue in just a moment.
Hi, I'm Atiyat Mayans.
And I'm Eric Dunn.
We know that young people are smart and capable of understanding complex issues in the world today.
But apparently, a lot of other people in the media just don't.
That's why we created Today's Youth, Tomorrow's World. We want young adults to learn about the issues that affect them, how, and what they can do about it.
Our first discussion is on education and democracy and the state of education in America.
We hope that you'll tune in on Wednesday, August 7th at 6:30 p.m. for Today's Youth, Tomorrow's World, here on KSFR.
20 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. Santa Feans are going to see a new voting system for city elections known as ranked choice voting. Here to discuss the changes is Santa Fe County Clerk Geraldine Salazar. Geraldine, what exactly is ranked choice voting?
Ranked choice voting allows voters to rank multiple candidates in order of preference. Instead of voters voting for one candidate, a voter ranks his or top three choices. Usually there's three, but they rank three. So if you just don't mark in your one choice, you will have three choices in rank of one, two, and three.
And what are some of the advantages of voting this way?
Well, advocates of the ranked choice system praise the process for its ability to determine a winner in a single election. Although it won't be the majority of votes that a candidate receives because they remove after you have your first and then they remove. It's rather complex, and I don't want to get into it in depth, but there is an artificial majority when you go through that process.
Now, it will be possible with the new system to have one candidate garner the majority of the popular vote and still not win, correct?
Correct. The candidate who gets the most votes may not win, because the ability of another to gain more second and third places.
Is ranked voting something that's going to become more popular throughout the state and the country?
Well, I don't have statistics about that across the country. All I can tell you that in the state of New Mexico, the city of Santa Fe is the only one that's had that voted into their charter. I haven't heard of any other community or city, municipality go that way.
Can voting machines handle ranked voting?
We don't have the voting machines to implement this ranked choice voting process. First of all, counties do not purchase voting machines. And so therefore, we don't have the capabilities to count ranked choice ballots. Ranked choice voting has never been implemented in the state of New Mexico, and currently the Secretary of State is in the process of evaluating proposals to purchase new voting tabulation machines. But we also need to understand that these new machines may or may not have the ability to tabulate ranked choice votes, depending on several factors, including that machines are offered by the various vendors, how much they will cost, and most importantly, whether such tabulating machines can be certified to be consistent with New Mexico law requiring paper ballots. I haven't heard any word about any machines being certified for ranked choice voting. So as far as implementation, there is still no definite time of when that will occur.
And on another topic, you've put out a release warning New Mexicans about a scam regarding their obtaining property deeds. Tell us about that.
Occasionally, and I'd say annually, this happens. And so after this happens, I do send out alerts to the community where companies from out of state, generally speaking, they are from out of state, they send out solicitations via mail offering to provide for a fee of $83 a copy of their recorded deed and a property profile. These solicitations provide false and misleading information. They're false because what they're stating and misleading, they state that you can obtain a copy of your grant deed or other record of title from the county recorder for up to $83. Another misleading statement is acquiring property information involves waiting for hours, which is not true. Another, you will need to go to the county recorder's office in person. So the first issue is to purchase a deed, a certified copy of your warranty deed, the county clerk charges $2 because usually a deed is one page. So for certification, we charge $1, and then for each page, $1. So that would be $2 if it's a one-page deed. The other issue is that people do not have to wait for hours to obtain this document. They can also order it by mail, and sometimes people do send us an email stating, would you please provide me a deed, and then we go ahead and proceed on how to apply and to receive this deed. So $83 is a very high price to receive a certified copy of your property deed from Santa Fe County. And what these companies do is they send out this solicitation, they get the name of the individual who wants to receive this document, and the individual, if they want it via their solicitation, then the person sends $83. After they obtain the $83, this company then sends a list to the county clerk's office requesting for all of these deeds, pays $2, and then they have received $83 from the customer.
There has been a decrease over the last few years in this type of scam. What do you attribute that to?
We've been sending out scam alerts for several years, and also the former clerk and I would go on her TV show and announce this to the public about this scam. So it's lessened the impact to the community.
And what should people do if they receive one of these letters?
They can call us immediately, and we'll explain the situation. We do have people coming in with this letter, this deed processing notice they send out to citizens in Santa Fe County, property owners. So they have come in, we see it, and then right away, if we see them, we send out a press release.
Anything else you'd like to add?
Well, we need to understand that it's not illegal. It is legal in the state of New Mexico to do this type of solicitation, but it's not necessary for any individual to use such services to obtain copies of recorded deeds from the Santa Fe County clerks. So just come directly to the Santa Fe County clerk's office, and we will provide you a copy of your certified deed.
Santa Fe County Clerk Geraldine Salazar, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR. Often at this time of year, the state releases bulletins regarding the need for certain communities to boil any of their drinking water. Who makes these decisions, and what are some of the major contaminants we have to deal with here in New Mexico? KSFR News reporter Charles Maynard joins us now to file this report.
From time to time in New Mexico, a warning is issued stating that a community needs to boil its drinking water. Who makes those decisions? Why are they made? And what do we need to do to react to one of them? Violet Valerio Hirschfeld is a Water Bureau manager for the state of New Mexico and explains how the warnings are issued.
Well, basically, the state does, the Drinking Water Bureau, and typically what happens is, well, let me give you a little bit of background. Public water systems are regulated. They have specific contaminants they have to test for. One of them is being total coliform bacteria. When a total coliform bacteria is detected, the lab then further tests for the presence of E. coli. If E. coli is present, then we immediately take another sample within 24 hours, and if that's confirmed as a positive, then a boil water advisory goes out.
All regularly used water sources in the state must be tested.
If they are a public water system, then they are required to sample on a regular schedule. We have about 11 people throughout the state that monitor the drinking water quality.
In addition to E. coli, there are other contaminants which have the potential to cause serious health problems.
Well, we have seen some uranium issues. We do have some uranium issues in the state. Occasionally some nitrate issues, typically more in the rural type areas, runoff from manure and that kind of stuff. But arsenic was another big one that we had a large amount of systems that were affected by the arsenic, and mostly because the level was dropped. A few years ago, EPA dropped the level of arsenic, and I think there was about 90 systems in New Mexico that were affected by the lower level. So they didn't meet it. So in effect, then they're needing to treat for that contaminant.
The warnings occur much more frequently in the summer months.
It's probably basically because of the warm weather. Yeah, we really haven't been able to pinpoint why exactly, but typically they do crop up in the summer more so.
Basic steps must be undertaken when under a boil water advisory.
They would need to definitely boil their water as advised. You wouldn't want to use the water for any types of human consumption, basically, which includes eating, drinking, cooking, dishwashing, oral hygiene, bathing, and showering. And bathing and showering isn't that you can't take a bath or a shower. It's if you happen to drink in some of the water or something like that when you are bathing or showering, that's when it's an issue. It's not just it going over your body. It's when you actually ingest it.
Violet Valerio Hirschfeld from the state of New Mexico.
Just keep on top of your public water system. Ask questions and just be informed, I guess, would probably be the best thing.
For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by the Pueblo of Tesuque Flea Market, the flea for over 20 years, hosting local and international vendors dealing in everything from handcrafted imports and old pawn jewelry to specialty foods and garage sale finds. Located at 15 Flea Market Road in Santa Fe, right next to the Opera, the Tesuque Flea is open 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from March through December. For more info, email seetheflea@yahoo.com or visit online at tesuquefleamarket.com.
12:30 here in the KSFR newsroom. Current temperature in downtown Santa Fe now 79 degrees, on its way to a high in the mid-80s. Weather-wise, it appears that our southwestern monsoon is poised to bring us more rains at times this week and beyond. Joining us to take a look at the forecast is meteorologist Brian Geyer with the National Weather Service office in Albuquerque. Brian, tell us what to expect this week. More of what we've recently had?
It still does look like that. Like in July, we saw most of the activity coming across the state from the north. Now we're in a more traditional monsoon pattern where the high pressure is off to the east over Texas, and we're having deep, southerly moist flow coming out of Mexico up into New Mexico. And so that will increase the potential for locally heavy rainfall as we go through the week for the Santa Fe area.
And you note on your website's forecast discussion page that the late week period could dry out a little, but then reestablish itself for the weekend and beyond?
Right. It looks like today will be a little bit of a downtick compared to yesterday across the area. And then on Tuesday, there'll be a backdoor cold front that shifts southwest across northeastern New Mexico. And that will prime the state for another round of locally heavy rainfall, including the Santa Fe area, as we go into late Tuesday afternoon and Tuesday evening. Wednesday does look like it could be another active day. And then Thursday, there'll be some drier air that shifts into the area from the west. And as we go into the weekend, just some general thunderstorm coverage. And then, like you said, for next week, it does look like, again, another good shot of moisture coming up from the south across much of New Mexico.
And for next week, you see that as a more classic monsoon setup with a high pressure center setting up over Texas and funneling moisture around it clockwise into our state, yes?
That's correct. And we typically look to see any disturbances that run around that high coming out of southeast Texas up across old Mexico. And even occasionally a tropical disturbance may move in from the Baja region. We don't see anything quite like that yet. That tends to be more towards the end of August into September. However, there are some indications for next week there could be some type of tropical disturbance or easterly wave that shifts out of the Gulf of Mexico and attempts to move up towards our area as we go into early next week.
Thank you, Brian. That was Brian Geyer, meteorologist with the National Weather Service office in Albuquerque.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by Greenfire Times, a new monthly publication focusing on all things green, including health, healing, organic foods, nutrition, permaculture, sustainability, green-collar jobs, and renewable energy. Greenfire Times is distributed at newsstands from Albuquerque to Taos. More information and an online edition can be found at greenfiretimes.com.
12:33 in Santa Fe, here in the KSFR newsroom. The bottom of the hour is a good time to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
I spend a lot of time at Whole Foods, and no surprise, since I spend a lot of time there, I spend a lot of money there. But you can shop wisely at Whole Foods and economically, but they make everything look so gosh darn good. Recently, I came across something at Whole Foods that I had never seen anywhere, positively brilliant in its simplicity and logic. I like to cook, and in just about everything I cook, I like to include the holy trinity of Cajun cooking: pepper, onion, celery. Pepper can be your choice, of course, from a variety, the same with onion, although fewer choices, and then celery. Celery is dicey for me, pun intended. A bunch of celery can go from 99 cents to $2.99. And living by myself, most of the celery, most of the time, goes bad. But at Whole Foods, they had a bin of individual celery stalks sold by the pound. I bought 3 stalks. From now on, just call me a celery stalker. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
And with that, we will conclude today's edition of At Noon, KSFR's Extended Noon News Hour. Dan Garrity with you here at the news desk, with many thanks to my contributing colleague today, Charles Maynard. And we'll be back with more news of and for New Mexico for you tomorrow, and as always, we hope you join us.